This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Darren, you gonna play behind me? And then whatever's the...
or the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here. And I first want to say hello to my friend Celeste Vokes, who's under the weather right now. Celeste, we're all pulling for you and rallying around you and know you'll get better. And so hope everything is well, and we'll be checking in on you shortly and say to the family it'll all work out. And so again, Celeste is a very dear friend and to us, and you've heard her here on KWAI. She has done a few voiceovers for me, and anyway, real awesome family, and just hope you get better, Celeste, and I'll be stopping in and seeing you and saying hello again shortly. So anyway, we're going to have a number of things to talk about, but I'm going to have in the studio here with me Mrs. Edna Franco. Yesterday's paper you may have seen in B6 section. The section B6 talked about foreclosure rescue fraud prompts consumer warnings. And I have some things that we're going to talk about with her and some revelations and revealing that the actions taken against her were based, as she describes, on false allegations and false information. And she is calling into question the integrity of the entire DCCA and its process. And having spoken with the person, their sole person or piece of evidence or party that is used for evidence is retracting. So that should be an interesting conversation. And out at Koalaloa, there's a discussion going on, and I've asked them to call back, and we'll take up that a bit. And we'll talk a little bit about what's going on out there at Kamilo Nui Valley in Hawaii Kai. Illegal dumping or dumping that's inconsistent with where the city and other entities seem to exempt themselves. But we're going to get to the bottom of that and talk about that, and hopefully we have a little fun. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Aloha, Carol. Am I on?
Go ahead. How can I help you?
This is Kisi. I'm up at Koalaloa.
Okay.
We've got a couple of issues going on, and thank you for referring to them. Right now, we have a family in the Kahuku Plantation. We have 31 families who've received eviction notices. We have 15 court cases going on. And currently, one family, the Eugenios, is on eviction watch. We're not sure. They could be evicted any day now. As you know, the plantation families had been promised those homes for generations. It's gone back and forth with Continental Pacific, and I would urge people to look at the Civil Beat article that talks about the lawyer, Lex Smith, buying some of those lots. And he, as you know, is a campaign manager for Mayor Kirk Caldwell. We also have the Koalaloa Unsustainable...
Take a breath for a minute.
Okay, sorry.
People can only process one sentence at a time on the Carol Cox Show. No, I'm teasing.
So sorry. I had so much coffee this morning.
Oh, so have I. You're saying, is it Rex Smith?
Lex, L-E-X.
Okay, Lex Smith, not Rex. Okay.
Lex, yeah.
There's a Rex Smith, too, who tend to show up on the commissions and what have you. Okay, go ahead.
And the second thing in Koalaloa and Kahuku is this Tuesday evening. People don't know, but the Koalaloa Unsustainable Communities Plan by the city council, the city and county of Honolulu, is going forward. Mm-hmm. And the current plan was changed against the will of the community and includes the massive development at Turtle Bay, two more hotels and hundreds of more condos, and the Envision Laiea plan. That's the building out of Laiea, making BYU 5,000 students strong, plus spouses, you know, family, staff. A three-story Marriott and a whole new town in Nelekahana Gunstock Ranch between Laie and Kahuku. Currently, that is in the plan. Mm-hmm. The hearing is this Tuesday, this night, up at Kahuku at 6 o'clock. It's the city's zoning committee, headed by Representative Akaika Anderson, City Councilman Akaika Anderson. The Defend Oahu Coalition has a rally before it. I believe it begins at 4:30 to 6 at the Kahuku District Park, and they, Defend Oahu Coalition, has things on their website. But the plan has already passed its first hearing for Kulaloa. That's beautiful. Ka'ava, Kahana Valley, Punalu'u, Haula, Laie, Melikahana, Kahuku, and Turtle Bay. And they put the first hearing of that plan in Leeward Community College. On the other side of the island, and it passed. Yes. And now it's gone to the zoning committee. People don't know about this.
So
and
this is the Ko'olauloa master plan. You say unsustainable plan.
Well, it's called the Sustainable Communities Plan.
Right. In case someone was going to Google that, they would be looking for unsustainable, and surely the city and state did.
It's Ko'olauloa, and it would pave over the country. There is no way we can have 10,000, 16,000 more people up in the country between Turtle Bay and Ka'ava. It would make this whole side from Kaneohe, bumper-to-bumper traffic, all the way to Haleiwa. It's a one-lane highway.
Uh-huh.
You can't sustain that, and they keep claiming it's going to be for jobs, but this looks like us for wealthy visitors and visiting students, and
right,
the community would be expected to get low-income service jobs.
Right.
So we're very concerned it would damage the whole country. I mean, you would pave over the country, you'd be in cement, overcrowded beaches, traffic all up and down Windward and North Shore.
Okay. So the meeting again, before we go.
This Tuesday, October 8th, at Kahuku High School in the cafeteria, starting at 6 o'clock, they will allow testimony.
Okay.
And I'll let the people from Defend Oahu, if they could call in with more details. We've been fighting for higher income jobs for our community, like the film and TV. If they pave over the country and put hotels on the beaches, we'll lose those higher income jobs. For instance, film and TV films extensively in Kulaloa.
Right.
And our children would like those higher income jobs instead of traffic and very lower income service jobs.
Okay. Well, we'll listen in, and if anybody else want to call in quickly, just let us know. Give us a call.
Thank you, Carol.
Right.
Sorry I had so much coffee, but thank you for your show. We love it.
Aloha.
We just love your show. Aloha.
Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Anyway, the Ko'olauloa sustainable plan has been out there and bounced around. And what is really happening with this entire game is lots of politics. And we know that the people involved within the Department of Planning and Permitting has been less than honest in their efforts in handling of this. Just to tell you straight out, we've done many investigations and reviews, and there isn't one integral thing about this from the standpoint of the Department of Planning and Permitting. It's political. As the papers remind us that there is a guy named Mufi Hanneman who wants to sneak back in. I would say sneak, because he damn sure wouldn't be able to walk in with his head upright. Has bowed down and gave away the candy shop early on with David Tenoy, who now works for R.M. Towel, or was a left, departed the agency to go for Towel. Now we have Atta, who's conflicted as you can get. So, again, Core Ridge, Ho'opili, now Ko'olauloa, and downtown Kaka'ako. So, guys, those of you out, those activists out there that want to call up and say, this guy's a good guy, step back and take a look at it in its totality. Who's screwing you? They all are. So, you know, I feel so uneasy when people call up and go, well, you know, this guy, he's a good guy. You know, yeah, but it's one drop in the bucket in the whole pond. They're all sitting back, voting, whether it's rail, in unison, predisposed, knowing exactly who paid them off and knowing exactly what they're going to do. So I would encourage you to get out there and raise your voices and do something. But in the process, don't forget how to use your vote. You know, a guy that gives you a candy, a Tootsie Roll today, and then come back and want the whole candy factory, he's not a good guy, guys. So anyway, it's the evictions that's occurring out there at Kahuku. That in itself is sad, but development must occur. But there's this, I heard the other day a discussion that it's the people that already have a house is objecting to the people. No, the problem is the people that have a house know that there's a certain carrying capacity and certain strain and stress on the daily activities and the traffic and all of that. The carrying capacity of a highway with so many few lanes dictates the volume of houses and what have you. So do you put a limit on the number of houses? I don't know, but this silliness about those that have houses just don't want anybody else to have one. Well, I don't think that's the case. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
I got a comment for you.
Go for it.
I just want to let folks know that we will be holding a rally out in Ko'olauloa the day of the hearing, the Zoning and Planning Committee hearing, at 4 o'clock from 4 until 5:30. That's when the doors open at the Kahuku High School cafeteria. That's when the Zoning and Planning Committee doors open for that hearing. But from 4 until 5:30, we'll be holding a sign waving and a rally to keep the country country, because folks out in Ko'olauloa and on the North Shore know that this is yet another development scheme, and this one attempting, the development interest attempting to codify two massive development schemes in Ko'olauloa that will affect this entire island in a negative way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. So, you there?
Yes, sir.
So what is the organization? Are you guys going to take any action? What's down the line? Is there any contemplation of legal action? Has anybody considered that?
Well, certainly. We feel that the DPP's actions have been arbitrary and capricious. I mean, it's hard to speculate as to what the city council will do. We're very hopeful that the city council will take the plans that DPP changed around, right? Because this plan came out of the public advisory committee one way, reflecting the wishes of all five communities in Ko'olauloa, and then Mufi Hanneman's DPP met behind closed doors with developers and changed this plan around, mm-hmm. fundamentally. And so we're very hopeful that the city will amend this plan to go back to what the public advisory committee had recommended, what constituents or residents from all of Ko'olauloa, not just La'ie, not just special development interests from Hawaii Reserves and Turtle Bay, but all the people had recommended. So we're very hopeful. But we feel the DPP's actions have been very shady, to say the least. And so after the Zoning and Planning Committee hearing, it'll go back to another public hearing, and then it'll go before second reading, before the full city council. And we really want to make sure that it gets amended to take out the urban boundary extension from Malaikahana, because what they're proposing is basically to create a brand new city in Malaikahana. And the organization I work with, Defend Oahu Coalition, will be holding this rally just to let residents know that this is not going to go away, and to let the city council know that residents won't stand for the urbanization of rural Oahu.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can only submit that just the thievery and the dishonesty that was associated with this, arriving at this point, Hanneman rolling over like some little fat puppy, rolling his belly, the RSI and those folks, it's shameful. We don't seem to have any relief from any of this. And now we have Caldwell. What is his stance? Is he
pulling for or supporting the new development of the new plan? Or has it spoken out?
You know, unfortunately, Mayor Caldwell said that if we got rail, if we focused on developing Second City and within the urban corridor, then we could keep the country country. But unfortunately, now he says, well, we'll keep the country country except for this plan in La Ie. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not keeping the country country. This plan in La Ie is a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about a brand new city in Malaikahana that would be larger than La Ie or Kahuku on either side of it, which would include a strip mall, a light industrial park, hundreds and hundreds of market homes, and they won't tell us what the affordable homes look like. It's unfortunate. I'll tell you what's unfortunate, Mr. Cox, is the fact that they have promised every man, woman, and child in La Ie that they're going to have a house, right? That these affordable, quote-unquote, affordable houses are going to go to them.
Mm-hmm.
When a Ward Research poll that's recently come out shows, based on the median income in La Ie and in Ko'olauloa, that 84% of the folks out there won't be able to afford one of these homes.
Exactly.
So then where are we at?
Exactly. It's the old carrot, you see. Promises, promises, promises. And that is what is the biggest lie being told. It's not affordable.
Yeah.
Look at the number of foreclosures that exist in this state as it stands. Why? Because of the economy, lack of the economy. I know some are going to argue it's going to bring jobs. But that's a close society out there, as far as I see it, in that community out there. Very strict, and they have the hands up the back of our legislators and council members. So what is the state senator doing? Is Donovan De La Cruz, that is his district, correct?
No.
Clayton Heath.
It's Clayton Heath's district. Senator De La Cruz is over on the Wahiawa Mililani side. But
I thought he went to Kahuku side. No,
he doesn't go around that far. He did represent the North Shore at one time, Senator De La Cruz did, but it's now all the way around Wahiawa.
Right, but it was part different. Of the voting in the early process. But what about
he was, correct.
What about he? Clayton Heath, what is he doing? Where is his stance on?
Senator Heath has been very helpful on issues such as Turtle Bay and has also been critical of what is going on in La Ie because, after all, what's happening in La Ie is a manufactured crisis.
Mm-hmm.
They were allowed to upzone residential property back in the 1990s. Some of the same members of the Public Advisory Committee allowed them to upzone so that they could build affordable housing. Back in the 1990s, they never built that affordable housing within the existing boundaries of La Ie. They never built that housing. So, you know, now they've manufactured this crisis, and they're saying we have to urbanize the district, right? But back to Senator he's been very helpful in limiting the development at Turtle Bay, or at least pressuring the developer at Turtle Bay to limit that development to the existing footprint.
How did he
and
do
trying
that?
To conserve, trying to conserve the under.
Hold on, how did he do that? You say he put pressure. Has this matter been before the legislators where he had actual power, or has it been just a casual him commenting?
No, he actually introduced a bill, Senate Bill 891, last year during the session.
Okay.
And that bill called for the conservation of the undeveloped portions of Turtle Bay. Now, we're talking about Turtle Bay now. This is one of the two big development proposals in Ko'olauloa.
And did that did it pass?
Correct. No. The legislation never passed because...
Okay.
And Senator, he led the charge on that.
Oh, I understand. I'm not. It sounds like you want to get on the count. Let's just talk straight turkey here. You're going back. I'm just asking you. You know, when you say he did, I want to know what did he do. And let's quantify it and see. Maybe there's somebody else out there can add on to this. But
so because of that bill, the developer at Turtle Bay wrote him a letter and said, you know, we'll work with the state. Table the bill for now because the bill is using eminent domain, which the state passed way back during the Lingle administration.
Right.
So the developer said, hey, wait a minute. We'll work with the state. We'll negotiate with the state in good faith and work to conserve this undeveloped property. And those negotiations will come to a head, I think, or come to an end in November.
Okay.
And then we'll sort of reassess and see where we stand.
I understand, but the point is that it's still in limbo, basically. It was a bill introduced, and so he introduced the bill, And yes, it triggered a letter, but none of that is binding, correct?
That is correct.
Right.
We're still very much in limbo.
So we'll give a hand clap for him writing a letter and stepping in and introduce the bill. But let's not let the people think that this is done because he introduced legislation. They all introduce legislation. That's the typical approach, right?
Absolutely. The fight is not over by any stretch of the imagination. And this whole Kohala'loa Sustainable Communities Plan is not running through the state. That runs through the city and county of Honolulu. So
Right. The
main thing we're telling folks now is this Sustainable Communities Plan is not sustainable, and it's not a community's plan. The development interests have changed us around to be very focused for what a very few number of special interests want, developers' wish list, and it's completely unsustainable. I mean, we're talking about the urbanization of rural Oahu. This is maybe the tipping point. You still there? Hello?
Yeah?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. There was a little glitch in here. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I was just mentioning the fact that this could perhaps be the tipping point for rural Oahu, because when you take this cumulatively, you look at this in the context of other developments that are being proposed. Koa Ridge is a great example. Good Lord. I mean, you talk about traffic, right? We're talking about a lot of different issues that are in the news today. Gentrification, folks losing their homes in Kahuku. You talk about traffic, the problems at Laniakea. We need to be talking about the underlying causes of some of these things. And we're talking about mainland banks and developers, multinational banks and developers that are coming into Hawaii and using our elective process to subvert what residents want and what is good for this island.
So what is Mr. Ernie Martin, chairman and representative of the city council from that district, what is he doing? Where is his stand? What has he done that's solid now? I don't want to say he went out with pom-poms and stood in the rain on occasion. I mean, something that's of substance. What has he done?
As far as the Kahuku residents and as far as the evictions have gone, it's my understanding that he's introduced a couple different things in the city council that have gone nowhere with the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been very supportive of the residents out there. As far as the Kohala'loa Sustainable Communities Plan goes, I think he's waiting. I think the council, for the most part, will defer to Chair Martin since he is the council member of the district and he's also chair of the city council. But I think we're hoping, very, very hopeful, that he will help to amend this document to reflect the wishes of residents and what Public Advisory Committee had recommended.
Well, I've known him to have a history of, on occasion, deferring matters or just not scheduling it for hearing. Would that be some plausible thought or strategy?
Sure. I mean, that's a possibility, certainly. And I should say Chair Martin's given us no reason to doubt him. He's done some great things in the district, including the park in Haleiwa, helping us save the park in Haleiwa. So we're very hopeful.
Yeah,
that's
what the other people out there said at the, Heliumanu said. He's a really nice guy. He gives us lots of money,
you
know, big donations, right? So grants. But again, here's why I'm sounding really sarcastic and all, because we've been at this a while, and I see the community with its back against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And someone needs to reach behind them and feel just how close they are to the wall now. And ascribing to this practice of he's a good guy, they've done nothing for you. They leave you in limbo, and that area should be not preserved, because preserving something is just not possible in today's world. When human beings, but using it wisely and conserving it and looking at the aesthetics of it and the value, that's what the problem is. And so I would suggest that everybody out there, if they can reach and handshake their representatives, that's one thing. But put your other hand behind your back and feel how close you've been pushed against the wall in the fight. And it's really not a fight. It's an abuse of authority on the part of city council. It's neglect. It's an abuse of authority on DPP, on the mayor, and all of them, because they have in their minds they are predisposed. And even when it came to the EV out at Turtle Bay, the incomplete studies and all of that, disclosure, DPP drug its feet, wouldn't disclose, if I'm not mistaken, would not disclose the coal out plan. It was redone or something, and something, it wasn't released for a while. Or the people out there, I remember Chun James and others complaining that they didn't get to see certain things in certain meetings, failure to disclose, right?
Oh, yeah, and it's still happening now. The Planning Commission asked DPP for facts and figures as stipulation before this was moved through the City Council, right? They passed it, but that was one of the things that they passed it. It was one of the conditions, right, is that DPP get back to them with facts and figures. We're still waiting for those facts and figures, and it doesn't look like they're going to be available for this October 8th meeting on Tuesday. So here we are again, the City Council expected to make decisions without enough information. And I'll, just to go back to what you said about, you know, feeling how far it is from your back being against the wall, and I agree with you absolutely. And if this plan passes, it won't be because this community didn't fight, and it won't be because we didn't give council members the ammunition they needed and the amendments they needed to make this plan truly sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean, ours is the compromise position.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is build your affordable housing, HRI. Do what you were supposed to do back in the 90s. Build it within your community boundaries. Grow your university. We've even given concessions about growing up instead of out, right? We just don't want a new city in the last Ahu Kua'a that runs from the mountain to the ocean in Ko'olaloa.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And so, and just to tack on to that, Turtle Bay, we're simply saying, amend this document to put Turtle Bay in a special planning district to support the efforts of the state, to support what residents want, which is open space and conservation of the undeveloped lands. And you can develop, have some limited development within your footprint.
Right.
We feel that that's the compromise position. That is a level-headed approach. And we're very hopeful that the council members will see that and will make these amendments. And if they don't, you know what the answer is if they don't. Organize, 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 and vote them out of office.
Well, let's initiate a campaign, and I've been hoping to get involved from this angle. And I'd like, in this process, after this meeting, maybe next Sunday we can schedule something. And because there's Keone Dudley out on the other side doing the whole Pele and others, not just Keone, Dr. Keone
yeah.
Dudley. And everywhere there's these little struggles. But it's the same culprits, the same people, and every single one of them want to tell us how good the mayor is. He gave us ice cream on a hot day, but then he walks away and it melts in your hand. We need to change that mindset, and none of them are any good. I just tell you, I mean, how many times do you need to get screwed before you realize you're about to get pregnant or whatever? You know, it's like this love affair. There is no romance in this process. It's simply, it's abusive. It's an abusive relationship. They love us. They slap us around. Then they go get in bed with the big business and the others out there and give them what they want. And we, you, me, and others struggle just to be heard.
It's enough to make you a little cynical, isn't it?
Well, no. I'm a realist now. I use the word loosely, cynicism. But, no, this is reality. We've been duped, and we're continuing to be and allow ourselves to be duped. There needs to be, and I applaud you for that protest you're going to have. You're going to have sign waving?
That's right. 4 o'clock on Tuesday at the Kahuku District Park.
Okay, this coming Tuesday.
Yes, sir, right there next to the community association, right there next to the community center in Kahuku, basically right across from the sugar mill. You'll see us there with our Keep the Country signs and posters and
yeah, because,
all kind of good folks out there.
We've come so close with this, the nearness to voting and approval. Give me a call back, and then Casey, if you're listening, call back next Sunday and update us, and let's get rolling. And if we can do without the compliments to the, make the legislators and the state representatives and city councils put up a shut up.
You bet, Mr. Cox. I really appreciate your time.
That. And I'm not, you know, degrading he's and Martin's efforts, but We've been at this stuck in the mud on this subject, and they seem to be moving right along. They're getting what they want, and I don't know. I don't want to sound like, you know, that my I'm being negative about the success on the part of the Keep the Country Country, but, you know, I think we need to wrap it up a little bit more.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Folks are fed up. They're ready to keep the country country, and we need to get that message across and make sure it sticks this time.
And you know, that Keep the Country Country is, people think, oh, they're selfish, and they just, no, it's about a sustainability. Where are we going to put all the people, all the sewage and all the traffic, and where are we going to put all of this?
Yeah.
You know, in the ocean, I'm sorry, we can dump everything in the ocean. Hey, well, thank you, and we'll talk to you later, but next week, feel free to call in, and I don't want to be, adversarial, but I have this theory. We kiss our legislators' hand too much. You see, we need to, before we kiss their hand any longer, we need to carry a napkin and be able to wipe their hands clean, because they got dirt on the hand from working for us and not for big business and big money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
well, I'll call you next week and give you an update.
All right. Thank you. Aloha.
Thanks, Mr. Scott. All right. Take care. Aloha. Bye-bye.
Hello.
Good morning, caller. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Cox. I got another side of the story.
Go for it.
The private side. My landlord's an heir to one of the big estates here.
Uh-huh.
And they were making arrangements because I have a conditions and circumstances, like diagnosis, that I can stay in my apartment for $150 a month for the rest of my life, with or without Section 8.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is the private sector can get involved and do marvelous things, and if the public sector gets involved and obstructs, you can prosecute. I think there's a way to keep people housed and loved and taken care of. Just remember, serve people costs money. Serve money costs people. Which side are you going to be on?
Yeah, right.
All right, Carol.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
All right, aloha. All right, you know, a couple things here, and then we're going to move on to another subject. I didn't get all the details that I needed to get. I was going to talk extensive about Hawaii Kai, not about the sludge, but another problem that has plagued the Hawaii Kai community for some while, and that's the cemetery site on Kamilo Nui Valley up in that area. So here's what's going on. Yet another, we just talked about the legislators and the city councils and all. There's this practice. Apparently, you know about the issues with the sludge that was transported to Waianae. Well, the Hawaii Kai community has been being dumped on for years now in a similar way, fashion or pattern. Different people. There is Grace Pacific is involved. There is Royal Construction, who share the same leaders, Hulahe, as you see in that business. Now, the city, for some strange reason, has given a permit years back, and they keep amending that permit. And then they go back and they allow these entities to amend or extend their permit or renew it. While you just heard in the last couple of weeks, Sir Trucking had a permit to store Grace Pacific gravel. So why didn't they extend that courtesy to Sir Trucking like they've extended to Royal Construction? And the reason is the city seems to write the law, enforce the law, and break the law at their leisure. So what's happening, there's concerns now that and allegations that they are bringing and hauling in material contrary to what has been agreed. And we're going to be pursuing this. I thought I was going to have some documents to talk openly and in greater detail, but I will be filing a complaint with the health department because having witnessed all of this, I think it's time that we now have a case and precedent with Sir Trucking that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. In other words, what's good for Sir Trucking is good for Royal Construction and Grace Pacific. If they're storing asphalt or coal plane up there, they need to stop it. They're storing dirt. We file complaints, and so has the other organizations up there, Livable Hawaii Kaihui. So there's something, again, new mayor, new director, same crap. Same crap. The political arm twisting and pocket lining and what have you. This guy Caldwell is just as slimy. That's just the bottom line. Nothing works here. If you got big money and big friends, then guess what? You can get away with big crimes. So anyway, the deal here is that what's happening up there, the people are having to deal with this. This situation sits uphill. So imagine whatever they're hauling in, they're not providing profiles for the material as they claim Sir Trucking required. So meaning, what are the constituents? What contaminants? What's the origin of this material? Who generates it? What's the volume? Well, the city isn't requiring these folks, Royal Construction and Great Pacific, to report that. So there should be a plan, a stockpile plan filed for each permit. Apparently, the people at the cemetery has been exempted. So, anyway, and by the way, I'm next week also I'm going to try and report to you. I file a complaint with the HIOSH. HIOSH has a problem. They are lazy, and they're dishonest, and they're supposed to be protecting the interests of the workers, the state workers, city workers, and workers in this city, in this state. I file a complaint of city workers driving a trash truck, and you know, it's proven that city workers and city trucks will run you over, back you over. Case in point, the most recent incident in IL. So I file a complaint showing pictures. HIOSH told me, oh, that was, those pictures were too old. They were in February. So we're going to let the city police itself. Well, just the other day I videotaped another one. They're backing up in condominium Halona area over there and different areas. And guess what? Backing up, no assistance, no aid. And you know how children play and elderly walk and stray. And let's see what HIOSH does. But I will tell you something. One of the most dishonest organizations or government entities that I'm finding is HIOSH. You remember the tower fell down on the guy out there in Campbell Industrial Park. And I think the agency, the company was fined $750 for one life. So, but we're going to keep riding them, and we're going to see what we can do to bring this to light, and we'll talk about it. So anyway, I have in the studio with me Miss Franco and Edna Franco, and we're going to be talking about an issue here. As I told you earlier, yesterday, on page B6, if you have that article, and we're just going to talk about it briefly now. But in the next hour, do the full discussion as much as we can get in. Foreclosure fraud prompts consumer warnings. And Miss Franco apparently is doing something that the bankers, the courts, that someone don't like. It seems to be what she does is audits. She's offering an audit service, and it's called forensic audit. And we're going to have her to talk at length about that. And she's going to make a statement because she came forward to, in her words, to clear her good name, and that she is being abused by the DCCA and the courts, and saying that, for example, I'll just read one little excerpt from the article. In one instance, last October, Franco, whose business is based on Hawaii Island, visited a distressed homeowner in Kalihi offering to conduct a $3,500, quote, forensic audit that would save the person's home, according to the order. Now, I've read the complaint filed by the officer, Yidayo, and I've got to tell you, the party from Kalihi is in the studio as well. And she is saying that she was tricked into signing and making a statement. So that should prove fatal for the court's case if we're not dealing with kangaroo courts. And also should raise the question of DCCA's approach if all this pans out. But we're going to have Mrs. Her name is DeBoyo, and also Ms. Franco. Good morning, Ms. Franco. How are you? Thank you for joining me.
Good morning, Carl.
And you're Edna Franco, right?
Yes.
And what's your company?
Well, my company name was Franchise Services, LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a certified forensic loan auditor performing, doing the audit.
Mm-hmm.
What it does is I prepare analysis for all the people that having into for, you know, all of their home are in foreclosure, and some attorneys are ordering audit from me to use it, you know, as a leverage to use against the banks lending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these banks, they are actually you know, doing lending practices, you know, illegally.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is this you know, all of these banks are actually they are actually assigning you know, a mortgage that is illegally, you know. In fact, the audit actually, they use this information, you know, in the court in their own separate lawsuit against the bank, or they will hire an attorney to use this audit, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, in order for them to, you know, to win the case, or you know, there's a lot of borrowers that actually, in the first place, the bank illegally, you know, approved them with a loan with a stated income.
Mm-hmm.
in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the bank approves them with a loan, they've been selling all the servicing rights to all the servicers all over the nation, and you know, all 50 states. And after this, sold it to the investor. They actually, you know, they've been selling it to the stock market,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they're doing.
So their banks are taking these houses and the mortgages and
mm-hmm.
selling them to the stock market.
Yes.
So I'm not well versed at this subject, but I'm interested in several things. Anytime a party is being used to as evidence to testify against another party, and that party that's giving the statement makes a declaration that they, one, want to retract their statement, two, that they were tricked, I'm interested in that to no end, you know. And so,
oh, okay.
So Mr. Tabuya and Marlena, just for right now, and in the next hour we'll go in greater details, the allegations that was made by DCCA that she came and conducted and made you promises. Just for right now, did what the DCA was claiming, is that true?
The investigator for the state, they tricked me.
Mm-hmm.
And the state let me sign the statement.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really understand to use against Edna
mm-hmm.
Franco.
Okay, and we'll go into details, but I have the affidavit. She has actually signed an affidavit. There's her, their attorneys for Ms. Franco will be filing a claim. Again, I've read the officer's part of his investigation, the accounts, and hopefully they'll get in details of that. But there was one instance, for example, they claimed that Ms. Franco just threw herself in, and that the way they worded it was Ms. Tabayo did not invite Ms. Franco, which is true in a sense because you had invited a friend of yours and who in turn brought Mrs. Franco. Is that right?
Yes.
So you felt that you were tricked by the investigator to obtain that statement. And then if that's the case, how did that work? Did he sit down and tell you that he was going to get a statement from you and then use this to prosecute Ms. Franco? So you're looking through your paper. Did he, the investigator, tell you that he was going to use your statement to prosecute or to Ms. Tobayo or Ms. Franco?
No.
Okay. So this is why you say you felt you were being tricked. Did you write a statement or he just take notes as he talked to you?
He just take a note.
Okay. And then in turn, he didn't tell you he was going to, or did he tell you that he was going to use that in court against Ms. Franco?
No.
So what happened when you discovered that this was happening?
I was upset.
Well, you were upset about it. Did you complain to anybody or did you say anything to the investigator when you learned that this? No.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I noticed you're looking. If you want to know why there's a delay, she's looking through her notes to find something. So Ms. Franco, what happened now? Right now, you're filing. What is the status of this situation? You were accused, and the judge ordered you not to operate or do something. Can you just give us a brief?
Well, the allegation from the state, the Office of Consumer Protection, they're claiming that I was doing a modification that you mm-hmm. cannot accept upfront fees, which is my job is a certified forensic loan auditor doing the audit. What it does is I'm just doing the audit, doing analysis for all their mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I do. And, you know, some borrowers or some homeowners, they use the audit, you know, and give it to their attorney, mm-hmm. you know, to prosecute or to do litigation, you know, against the bank.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my job or it's not, you know, it's up to the judge anyway to whether, you know, they win the case or not. I don't do any loan modification at all. And in the distressed property consultant, if you look at the Hawaii Revised Statute 480E-2, you know, any person who performs or any makes any solicitation, offer, or perform any of the following related to distressed properties when you accept upfront fees, you know, I don't do that. And they put me in the news that, you know, that I cannot accept upfront fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cannot perform my job and I cannot, you know, charge them for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job, you know. And I'm actually licensed in the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs. And, you know, if you look at in my business license in the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, that my job, my duties, is only doing the audit.
Mm-hmm. So in this audit, when you conduct an audit, you find documents that would help the homeowner because there may be fake documents,
yes.
false documents,
yes.
or documents that don't exist that should have existed. And we're going to talk in the next hour, and we're going to take a break here, Charlotte, about robo-signing.
Yes.
And this is the things you discovered in this
yes.
process. So hold that thought, and we're going to gather our thoughts, and we'll get back to you. This is the Carol Cox Show, 524-1080. If you have a comment or question, if you're experiencing problems out there, give us a call, 524-1080.
Thank you, Carol.
We'll be right back.
for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Oh.
If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol. The following program is brought to you by Carol Cox. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KWAI staff and management.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, and again, having a wonderful day here. And in the studio with me is Mrs. Edna Franco and Merlina Tobayo and others, and we're talking about, there was an article just the other day, yesterday, and as I gave the title in the Star Advertiser, the title heading is Foreclosure, quote, Rescue, Fraud Prompts Consumer Warning. And I had indicated in the early hour that there was a reference made where they said that Mrs. Franco was acting improperly, and that there was a Kalihi resident that had given a statement to the DCCA, which they relied on to actually bring legal action against Mrs. Franco. So my interest is this behavior on the part of the allegations, where Mrs. Tobayo now is actually retracted her statement, and I have in my hands here an actual affidavit of Ms. Tobayo, and she's here, and just in the interest of saving time, and there's other things I want to share with you. This is her affidavit, and it was signed just 7/24/13, and it's just, I'm over 18 years of age, which she acknowledged, that on about December 6th, I executed a declaration and this is her statement, that at that time I did not fully understand the nature of the document that I was executing, and I make this affidavit of Merlino Tobayo as a complete and full retraction of the unsworn testimony provided in the declaration of Merlino Tobayo, that I make this retraction voluntarily and of my own free will, that no one has offered me any promises in exchange for this retraction, and I am fully aware and apprised of the contents of this affidavit, and such contents therefore is offered for the truth of the matter asserted. That in late 2012, Edao interviewed me over the phone, then subsequently came to my house to talk to me. He never informed me that my declaration was going to be used as testimony in court or used as a basis of a complaint against Ms. Francia Services. And that is Francia, F-R-A-N-C-H-A, Services, LLC. Had I been fully informed that my declaration would be used as a basis of a complaint against against Francia Services, LLC, and Edna A. Franco, I would have not executed the declaration. I was misled and tricked by Yadao to sign the declaration, and I now retract its contents in its entirety. That on or about December 2012, Edna Franco and Mr. Henry Milana did visit my residence at 15, blah, blah. And at that time, Franco informed me that she was a, quote, certified forensic loan auditor, end quote, and she informed me about the information provided in the forensic loan audit. Not a distressed homeowner. Now, there's a big difference. She wasn't offering mortgage rescue or anything. She was offering as a forensic recovering documents, as she described in her. If you look at DCCA, it talks about some of the things that Francis offers. That Franco did indicate that a certified forensic loan audit may be helpful in determining the possible defenses that I can raise in a foreclosure action. That Franco never informed me at any time that she was a, quote, and this is key, property distress consultant, end quote, or assistant in a loan modification, quote, nor did she purport to represent herself to be a, quote, property distress consultant, or would be assisting in a loan modification. That Franco informed me that the best thing for me to do would be to do an audit to help save my property. That was a quote. And that was signed, again, 7/24/2013. Ms. Franco, is this what they were using against you? I noticed reading this. This is what the news article cited. I have a question. In talking to you yesterday, you indicated that you had not seen the ruling by the judge or seen this.
I have not seen the court order that's signed by the judge.
But it was in the newspaper.
It was in the news now.
So you find out by the newspaper before you get it from the courts formally.
That's what they say. That's what I think. I don't know.
You didn't get a copy.
I didn't get a copy.
But the newspaper apparently.
But the newspaper. I don't know if they have it or not. But.
But I mean, they're writing about it.
My attorney just came to Maui and they postponed it on January 9. The mm-hmm. case is not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still fighting for it.
So I have Attorney Melody Aduha, who's representing Ms. Franco. What's the status?
Yeah, Carol, the status is it's very ambiguous at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very ambiguous at this point because we're not sure. I know myself I have not received a signed file copy of mm-hmm. the order itself, but I think it's rather curious that the date of the hearing that they did have was dated April 4th, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the hearing on the 4th, on October 4th, Judge Rhonda Liu signed the order
mm-hmm.
of holding my client in contempt of court on October 1st, 2013. So that would have been 3 days before we were there to show proof of compliance.
Mm-hmm.
And till this day, I see nothing in Ho'ohike, which is a public access records of the court records,
right,
that indicates that the order has been filed. And my client as well as myself have not been served.
Mm-hmm.
After reviewing the file, I believe that from the beginning she was never personally served with any of these orders.
Right. And in this article it says, quote, Judge Liu's order finding Franco in contempt reflects the severity of Franco's irresponsible conduct. This is the order that she has not received?
No, we have not received it. I do have in my possession, however, an unfiled copy, which not sure when it was submitted for review, but just reading it, it appears that there was a lot of language that would have been inserted into this order, which I find to be against Ms. Franco's constitutional rights to interstate commerce. I feel that it's a very violative order, and I feel it's a very illegal order, and that is in and of itself grounds to have this order set aside, which is our intent.
I get the sense that when reading the many documents that's been shared that I've got together, there was a bit of cavalier behavior on the part of the investigator, because it just did not seem to be, well, the article itself, if the client and the defendant isn't provided and the attorney isn't provided the updated and timely order, a copy of it, how did the newspaper get it? So my concern is that, consistent with what many people have said now, this thing called foreclosure is so corrupt, and that there's so many people with their hands in the pot, that if you come along and try to aid or provide assistance to a homeowner who's in that predicament, you could be stricken down, or apparently the courts. Can you, for example, your efforts in your audit, you would find possibly something like a robo signing. Can you explain what that means and what it would do if you were to find that?
Well, under the state's consumer protection law, the banks are prohibited by engage in unfair and deceptive practices with respect to consumers. Okay, number one, Carol, they fail to properly identify the foreclosing party. You know, when they're asked for qualified written request, asking them for, you know, prove it to me. You know, send us a copy of the valid assignment of mortgage, you know, that you guys holding the mortgage in the note.
Right.
Most of them, they provided an illegal assignment of mortgage, which is most of, the assignor who executed the documents are all false documents.
And this is what you would find in forensic audits would do.
Yes.
And then recently, was there a case you were successful in presenting a case and some of the findings that she had or similar?
Yeah, that's correct, Carol. That is our, at this juncture, number one basis for the defense on any foreclosure action, is showing that there is wrongdoing on the parts of the banks and the financial institutions. And it's such a prevalent practice. It is so prevalent that the national mortgage settlement, which is approximately $1.5 billion, has come through with all of our 50th state's attorney generals being parties to this settlement, Hawaii being one of them. David Louie has signed it on the same, absolutely same basis that we as individual homeowners are now pursuing our right to make that claim.
I was taken aback by this, with this national mortgage settlement. There's an article. Checks will begin mailing on June 10th and will be completed by June 17, 2013. And the payment amount for each loan is approximately $1,480. Is that all that you would get if you were a homeowner in this settlement? Or what does that mean?
That's all they got.
And who gets the house?
The bank.
And isn't there an insurance that, as a homeowner, I pay an insurance mortgage? Is that to protect me if I defaulted, or is it to protect the bank? Who benefits from that insurance?
Well, Carol, most of the servicing company, like I said, the five servicing companies get sued by the Attorney General, 45 states, actually, except Oklahoma. So anyway, this settle, actually, for what I've known or what I've seen in the news, is $25 billion. In the state of Hawaii, get $71 million. And the homeowner gets $850. Some of the borrowers get $850, and some of them $2,000. That's the highest one.
Yeah, so when a house is lost in foreclosure,
illegal,
the bank gets the house, but they get compensated. What about, wasn't the bailout that President Obama signed, wasn't that to help?
Yes.
Or it bailed out the banks, but how was it supposed to help the homeowner?
Well, like One West Bank, they got bailed out for $853 million.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the homeowners got more, almost, not even half of the homeowners, you know, not half of the people that is in foreclosure never get modified.
Mm-hmm.
So
this there was a company, Lending Practices Services. I was reading up a little bit. Do you know about Lending Practices Service? Can you describe what was going on with that company in the background?
Well, you know, these servicing companies, actually, they created, you know, I mean, they in the beginning to the end, they violate, you know, the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, in the beginning, they approving all of these borrowers with a stated income. And the last is, it's about the mortgage-backed securities fraud, which is, you know, Eric Holder investigated all of this, and that's how they get settled.
Mm-hmm. And the LPS.
LPS, yeah, mm-hmm. Let me talk about LPS.
And they have that robo...
robo-signing, okay.
Yeah, if you could.
LPS is actually a lending processing services,
mm-hmm.
Okay, in the mainland. This company... they were all of these servicing company uses them to create a bogus assignment of mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
It's fraudulent documents now I'm talking about. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Most of the time they notarize it with it's not even in the front of them. You can look. I can show you a lot of papers that when the assignor signed it and the notary public signed it, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a different date.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are like 1 year apart.
So this practice, you're saying, if you describe it, they have a room, just young people
mm-hmm.
sitting there signing.
They hire a whole bunch of teenagers and fake names to sign four thousand documents, sign it as fast as they can,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that way, you know, they can foreclose on homeowners. Property.
So before there was a law that was passed, I guess it was where a foreclosure, the banks could just go down to this federal building or where a courthouse and have an auction, as it was described to me. Okay. That has changed. What is that rule that made that change?
Yeah, it was a non-judicial foreclosure, and
mm-hmm.
we were, the state of Hawaii was one of the forefronts in changing that law in making banks, or prohibiting banks from having non-judicial foreclosures.
Mm-hmm.
So now all foreclosures has to go through the judicial system,
mm-hmm.
which of course is a plus. However, if you're at that stage where the rules of evidence are apparently, from my experience, not adhered to
mm-hmm.
at the time of the motion of summary judgment, then these banks are literally using the judicial system to assist them implement their conduct of
mm-hmm.
unfair and deceptive practices and continuing to abide by a forged document.
So what it sounds like is on occasion the banks have been found to file summary judgment as a strategy because the courts don't demand much of the evidence process, or is that accurate? Or
yes, that's correct. That's correct, Carol.
Okay.
They use the business records exception
mm-hmm.
to hearsay, and that makes it very difficult for the homeowner to bring in evidence of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And although the business records exception, there is an indication that unless there's a risk of what untrustworthiness, however, the courts have systematically just look at whether there was a note, whether the note has been breached, whether notice of default has gone out,
mm-hmm.
and whether that default has been cured. They don't look into whether or not the note has been fraudulently transferred or not transferred correctly, whether the assignment of mortgage has been fraudulently
mm-hmm.
Prepared, whether the notary public was actually there to verify the authenticity of the document and the affiant.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. There's no opportunity to verify the truthfulness of the matter asserted.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no safeguards. There is no safeguards. Unlike a trial where all of these issues come into play, you've got to show the custodian of records. Who owns the note? Who has the notes? Who has the right to foreclose?
Mm-hmm.
All of those do not come into play oftentimes in our judicial system as a pretrial motion.
Right. Now, what I've noticed, even with my mortgage, we find that one day it's owned by this, and then the next thing you get a letter in the mail, it's someone else that owns it. Is that as a result of the stock market approach where they bundle these mortgages up and sold them to the mm-hmm. stock market, or is that part of that process? And so this so-called, after reading all of this, I've just been on the periphery many times, talked about it, had someone on the show. But the American dream is the American nightmare,
mm-hmm.
the way things are set up. I don't know. Am I overemphasizing? Is it that bad?
Well, it's really bad.
It is bad. It is.
Can I get an amen?
Well, you know, these banks, when they bundle, you know, all of these actually original lenders already filed bankruptcy.
Right.
So all of these new investors, like, you know, I'm not going to mention it, but, you know, all of these investors that bought all of these, you know, mortgages, they bundled, you know, all the mortgage into pool, turned into trust. So, of course, therefore, they can no longer claim that they are a part of interest,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, they got paid in full. Why? Because FHA insured them. It's a Federal Housing Administration.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Attorney General, you know, brought this case against them for, hey, you guys already paid in full from the FHA. What are you foreclosing on these people for?
Mm-hmm.
And plus, when you turn your mortgage into stock market, 3 times in a row they got paid in full. That's why in the analysis that we show them, hey, you guys already got paid in full 3 times in a row, Carol.
For the same house.
It's a double dipping
mm-hmm.
to the homeowners, you know. And that's why we're here to clear up this, you know, my name, because
right.
I am being sued by the Office of Consumer Protection for investigating banks that violate Hawaii consumer protection law by engaging in unfair and deceptive practices.
Mm-hmm. And
I want to clear my name.
Now,
period.
Is it an over-characterization on my part that it seems like the banks and the mortgage companies have paved this path, smooth road, to the courts? They saw what was coming. Is it that the courts need to step back? And it looks like if you're not sanctioned by the banks and you don't carry a big name. Now, there's fraud out there. There are people out there every day trying to rip the homeowner off. You come on, I'm going to save your house, and then they disappear. You got all kinds of strategies and thievery. But it's what I've been reading now, it looks as though the court's not receptive to anything other than what the bank says. It's like the favorite child has the ear of the court system and the way the court system is set up. Evidence, they can file a summary judgment, and then when do you get to submit your evidence? Because they're demonizing you, whether right or wrong. How do we look at it? You're certified. I don't
mm-hmm.
know what school it was certified, but how does that work?
Well, when I went to school, you know, I tried to figure out why are they violating the banking rules.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these actually, most of them are servicing companies. There is what you call a depositor. There is what you call a seller. Mm-hmm. There is what you call a trustee. And there is what you call a servicing, master servicing company. And those, you know, entities, you guys have to know all of this. Because a lot of people doesn't know how does it work. But when I explain it to the attorneys, because, you know, they're the one, you know, doing the litigation, we need to explain to them, you know, that there is a violation going on. And that's my, you know, I'm certified to do it.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. This type of financial scheme that has been going on is so complex, so complicated, that the average layperson, there is hardly ever an opportunity for there are some out there which are amazing, but this is so complicated, it is so many layers upon layers, that you really need to get a professional to do some sort of forensic audit, some sort of investigation to determine where the chain of title of these mortgages have gone. And you've got also this entity called Mortgage Electronic Liquidation System, MERS. Again, another entity that's so atypical of the way, from beginning, how we record documentation. They have their own system. So it's very, very complex. And we use individuals such as Edna Franco to do the investigation, to testify as a expert witness, to inform the jury, to inform the judge as to what type of fraudulent behavior has gone through from the day of the origination of the loan until the foreclosure process. So what is effectively happening now, from my own experience, that if we are unable as attorneys to have this type of support, litigation support, in the state of Hawaii, then we have to look elsewhere for the same services that Ms. Franco can provide to clients here in the state of Hawaii. So effectively, DCCA is assisting also in allowing the financial institutions to continue on with this fraudulent deceptive behavior.
Right. Caller, thank you for waiting. You have a comment or question?
The first comment is, are you guys streaming live anywhere?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
I was listening to you on my car, and I came back inside, right? And I found the webpage, but didn't see.
Well, it will be up at about 12:30. It'll be up in about a half an hour after the show is over.
As far as what your guests are talking about, they're absolutely correct. Between 2000 to 2008, mostly in 2004, 5, 6, 7, and 8, the mainland lenders, and I'm excluding the local banks, the mainland lenders made hundreds of billions of dollars in making loans. The $25 billion settlement, I believe, was mentioned somewhere along the way, which was done in February of last year, is only a small part of what they actually made. As far as the title issues that they're talking about, those are also absolutely correct. Anybody who has a mortgage that was done in 2004, 5, 6, 7, or the first part of 2007 anyway, should have somebody who, hopefully a qualified securitized forensic auditor, review that mortgage form, because they may be owed money. What I didn't think was mentioned so far in terms of the program, and I'd be interested in getting the take from both your guests and the attorney, is that most of these loans were sold, the notes were sold, the mortgages went to MERS, Mortgage Electronic Registration System, but the notes were sold once or twice and ended up in a mortgage-backed securitized trust. Now, most of those mortgage-backed securitized trusts have anywhere from $1 billion to $4 billion worth of notes in them. They took those notes and put them into classes or groups, they call those tranches, but they didn't take your note and put it into one of those. They fractionalized your note and put percentages into maybe, they're usually 18 to 21 tranches in one of these loans, one of these mortgage-backed securitized trusts, and your note might be in as many as 12 of them. And they turned and sold bonds out the other end, mostly to pension funds and to some sovereign banks.
Mm-hmm.
They did get insurance on most of those, either with AIG Insurance Company, or sometimes they did a thing called a credit default swap, which is not insurance, but works the same way in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
So when we ran into the default in 2008, 2009, all of a sudden there was a lot of money paid into these mortgage-backed securitized trusts. So a lot of people, even if they weren't in default, in my opinion anyway, a good part of their mortgages are already paid off. I'm not saying any of them are fully paid off, but there have been some substantial amounts paid off. I have a particular one that's, there are 18 tranches, and the loan on this particular property is in 12, and six of those tranches are fully paid off. Now, getting the information about how much went to which particular mortgage or was attributed to which particular mortgage, such is a little bit difficult because that's not even on Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people out here who should be getting some credit on their mortgages, because the mortgage-backed securitized trust had those mortgages insured against default, and they collected on a lot of them. Here's the reason why this is so important, and I talk about people who are not in default still getting it paid off. The way my understanding is that if you took, say, one tranche, say it had $100 million worth of mortgages in it, that's only $700,000 that needed to reach the 7% default rate that AIG Insurance had, but the insurance had to pay off the whole $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
But that means that those percentages of mortgages that were in there, whether they were in default or not, in that particular tranche, got fully paid. That percentage got fully paid off. So there are a lot of people around with mortgages that should be getting some kind of credit, but the lenders won't tell you that. For that matter, even with a qualified written request, the only thing they're telling you is that they will pay you if you do happen to be in one of those mortgage-backed securitized trusts, because they're going to tell you who the owner of the note is. The rest of it, we need an expert person to go figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So thank you for listening to me. I'm sorry that you're assuming that their guests actually completed a number of situations for people.
Mm-hmm.
They actually got their loan modifications and the rest of it. And she's one of the few that's out here that's doing some legitimate work, and there should be some kind of arrangement made for those people that are actually doing legitimate loan modifications for people to be able to continue to do that without having to run into the problems with the law.
Right. Okay, well, thank you, caller. Appreciate your time. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Now there's a caller. Are you there? Okay, here's a question. There's this thing called Mortgage Foreclosure Task Force here in the state of Hawaii. What is the Mortgage Foreclosure Task Force? I see there's several members of the DCCA own that. And then there's a gentleman, Jeff Gilbreth, of the Hawaii Community Assets, people from Hawaiian Government Employees Association. What do they do? I mean, can you approach these people? With the forensic stuff, have they encouraged or ever invited you to come? And they're a task force. Have you had any interaction with them?
Do you want to hear my opinion?
No, I want to know if have they approached you or to review your process?
They never approached me.
So what is it that they do? You can give me your opinion.
My opinion is, the DCCA encouraged them to do doing a modification, mitigation program.
Okay.
Or something.
Right? Yeah.
I think so, something.
Mediation
program. So in the court, you know, every judge is offered them to do mediation. But my question is, how can they even modify the loan if the assignment of mortgages are all fraudulent?
Mm-hmm.
That's my question here.
Caller, you sound like you're still there. You got any comment on that or insight?
Well, actually, the mortgage, the task force you're talking about, I believe it's the one that was formed by a number of people to rewrite the mortgage foreclosure law. So what you have on that task force is you have a number of attorneys. They're involved in foreclosure collections.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have any attorneys that were involved in foreclosure defense because we have very few of those. Okay. It's hard to find. There are a couple, you know. There's one who you can go to, and he charges a $15,000 fee up front, and there are a couple of others.
Right. They're
very less than the figures on my hand,
mm-hmm.
at least on this island. I don't know about on Maui. I don't know. Hey, actually, on Maui, I'd like to know some. Anyway, what they really were, they were a group of people that was put together to try and rewrite the mortgage foreclosure law. That's what they are.
And
they were put together out there to help the consumer, the homeowner, or any of that sort of stuff.
Are they effective, in your assessment, or your opinion?
Well, they were effective in terms of what they submitted to the legislature here 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
as far as what the new law ought to be, because we passed a new foreclosure law.
Right.
Actually, they weren't completely effective in terms of what they were trying to do, because we're fortunate with the chairman of both of the committees, both in the House and in the Senate, that those chairmen paid attention to what was going on and didn't just take their word for it. And so we have a number of provisions in the current law that mm-hmm. really help homeowners, which they would have liked to have gotten out of there.
Mm, I see. So, okay.
Anyway,
thank you. Thank you. Anyway, this process, it's a nightmare for me. And now let's go back to Mr. Boyer here. You're going to file an action, her retraction of her statement. How will that play? I don't expect you to get into details because it's a process and a legal issue. But are you going to incorporate, or how will that work with her?
Yes, I am, Carol. This is Melody Aduha, counsel for Edna Franco. We are going to file a motion to set aside all prior orders, set aside and vacate all prior orders
mm-hmm.
and judgments in this case. Their only complaining witness is Merlina Tabuyo, and since she has retracted her statement, they really do not have any evidence against my client.
Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine. It looks as though the system is designed, anything that's not recognized or sanctioned by the banks or the lenders, the court system, the judicial system is designed the way it's set up now. It's not receptive. I mean, if I read a document where they had the courts had access or ordered a forensic, but they won't even incorporate that as part of the deal. Which they should, I think, a forensic investigation to see if there's fraudulent documents or what have you. Or where is the promissory note? Where is it situated? Three sales down the road, you know?
Yeah, that's correct, Carol. The judicial system, as it stands, pretty much takes at face value what is submitted to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it does shift the burden of proof to the defense. However, many of these defendants are pro se, and they don't understand the rules of court, rules of civil procedure,
mm-hmm.
and so they miss deadlines, and apparently the motion then goes unopposed, and the court will just rules on what it has before it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the caller previously said, there aren't very many foreclosure defense attorneys out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount or the percentage of success for foreclosure defense is very low in comparison to the amount of success that the financial institutions have, albeit on fraudulent documents.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a tribal issue of fact. However, courts are not looking at that. I now am, in my cases, submitting these forensic loan audits that are produced apparently not here at the moment because Ms. Franco is unable to conduct business. But they are produced on the mainland, and that is what is submitted. Mm-hmm. And it just remains to be seen whether the judicial system will take judicial notice of these documents and the audit itself and give it its fair credibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to this article, I'm very suspect. I noticed one obvious thing that is missing. You're not being quoted, Ms. Franco. Did they contact you or solicit the paper, ask or solicit a comment from you or your attorney for this article?
They contacted me, all of the people.
This article that the newspaper contacted.
Oh, yeah.
They ask you for a comment?
Well, a lot of people, they're not actually, they're not believing on it.
No, I think you don't understand. Did the newspaper call you and ask you for a comment?
Oh, no, they never called me. The newspaper, I'm sorry, I said the people.
You thought I said people.
The people, okay, I'm sorry. Okay, anyway, the news, you know, at least Andrew Gomez, he should at least, let me know that he's going to put it in the news or something, so that way I can be at least, he can hear on my side, you know, about me before he even put it in the news, you know. I wasn't being called or never informed me. So this is my, I'm just so devastated that they never contacted me to let me know about this.
Mm-hmm. But you do read your name in the paper.
Yes.
And that is...
Yeah.
So what I also found interesting with this, and it's their prerogative to write articles, but on one page, it talks about August filings hold steady. A better economy, loan modification efforts are credited with keeping new cases relatively low, speaking of the foreclosures. Why wasn't it says here, it went on to say, the state advises that anyone seeking foreclosure prevention help should avoid any business that collects a fee in advance. Did you offer the fee in advance?
I'm not, to tell you the truth, I'm not doing modification that you cannot accept upfront fees.
Right.
Any services in retail store or wherever, they provide services, you're going to get paid no matter what.
Right. and these are good points, but I was just a little interested in the fact that it was incorporated in this article opposed to the other article that did not name, but then again, that's the newspaper's prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
They can make. But I'm just curious, how did they get all of this information? And it's consistent with, if, as Ms. Tobayo has said, and again, you felt that you were tricked after you look at it now, correct?
Yes.
So this seems to be consistent with, I don't know. I have my doubts about this whole process. If there's any justice in foreclosure process, I think like everything else in the state, big money, big business has gotten control. The governor and everyone else appoints people that's going to pay homage or take orders and with ease, because if there is a forensic service available, you just don't take anybody. But if there's certified forensics available and you're certified,
mm-hmm.
or have a standard, invite that. That should be something done right off the bat. Are we talking about?
Well, every consumer they need their own protection too, especially
right.
their own assets. They treasure their home. They keep their home. They treated their home like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Losing their home is just like, you lose your hope, you lose your, it's harming a lot of people. Especially, if when you look at it, it's illegal foreclosure. It's unlawful.
Mm-hmm. So, this case right now existed in Maui, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what about Big Island? What about Kauai? Are we experiencing the same thing?
Oh, I wish, when we go back to the 2003 or 2000, I wish that modification that, offer to all the homeowners never been happened, because everybody should be paying their home.
Yeah.
Because the banks are getting bailed out, but the homeowner never get bailed out.
So what's the solution overall, not speaking specific to her case, what's the solution or the suggestions that to correct this thing and give the homeowner some better protection and security and fighting the bank in the foreclosure process?
Well, this is the thing, you know, people was begging the banks to at least modify their loans.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of them got denied.
Is that because they'd already sold it in the stock market?
Yes.
And so they've sold it for a high, and it's committed out there, and so there really no negotiation.
You're correct.
Because they've sold it in the stock market,
mm-hmm.
it's already sold for value,
yes.
and so therefore
mm-hmm.
you, the homeowner,
mm-hmm.
had no chance of negotiating. Is that safe?
Well, you know, our Security Exchange Commission, you know, it's regulated by Security Exchange
mm-hmm.
Commission. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, in New York law, once you're regulated by the Security Exchange Commission, you're going to be in compliance. So how can you combine the note together with the stock?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be null and void.
Yeah.
It's impossible for them to modify. So I said, and that's why I'm saying this, to let people know that what's going on with this banking system is just like dealing with this bank is like dealing with the organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I can see.
Well, apparently it's something that's not rising to the occasion of it don't smell.
But not all the banks, though.
Yeah, not all of them. But
not all of them.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, there was a bank that we tried to do analysis, and there's no violations.
Mm-hmm.
Not all the banks. I have, you know, there is one lady that, you know, she was asking to see if we can do, you know, do analysis, and I found out there's no violation.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's a USDA
hmm.
mortgage.
USDA mortgage.
USDA. There's no violation.
So what can, well, I don't know, this is a dumb question, Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, what can they do to incorporate do they invite forensic audits?
Well, when, for example, I'll give you some sample. Okay. For example, the Bank of America sold the mortgages to Fannie Mae. And actually, Fannie Mae sued Bank of America for toxic loan, you know, selling them a toxic loan.
Mm-hmm.
And they just settled now.
So,
yeah, according to the National Mortgage Settlement, Carol, we've got LIGMAC Bank, Bank of America, Citibank, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo. Those are the main large financial institutions that are part of this $25 billion settlement.
Mm-hmm.
They're the main players here. But back to your question, how does it look for the homeowner? Well, as the foreclosure defense attorney, we are trying to establish that the plaintiff lacks standing to move forward with the foreclosure action. And so the best way for the plaintiff then to correct its behavior, or fraudulent behavior, or wrongful foreclosure, would be either to allow the homeowner to have possession and a right of possession of their property without having that secured agreement hanging, or alternatively to bring down the interest so that it becomes unaffordable again.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I want to digress a bit on your active case, the one that you're going to file the motion 60 or
Rule 60B.
Rule 60 or 60B, asking for reconsideration and retraction of her statement. Not only did Ms. Tobayo write a retraction, there are two other affidavits with Annabelle Kabebe and Mr. Gentleman's name is Malane, I'm sorry. They too confirms what Ms. Tobayo say, that contrary to what the DCCA claimed in their filings, two other people who in fact were there firsthand. So I'm curious, just another little interesting side note, is that as it's described, the investigator went to Mr. Buya's house alone. Is that correct, Mr. Buya?
Yes, sir.
And no, he wasn't accompanied by anyone else to witness anything?
No.
So, first of all, you know, as an investigator, I don't know, maybe because this is a state and it's everything's, everybody's aloha, but in a situation like this, I couldn't find myself as an officer going to the home of a female or anyone just because I would want a witness and I would want. So this whole process, I'm suspect. And then if you were to read his filings from me, from a person who's read reports and affidavits and written statements, investigating report, I personally think it falls short. It lacks integrity the way when you look at the facts. The way he represented that she did not invite Ms. Franco, when in fact that is true, but Mrs. Franco's and Tobayo's friends invited Mrs. Franco on behalf of Tobayo, and it was cordial, and it was, they have a relationship. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So, anyway, I guess it just suggests that this is the judicial process, but this is the doorway to the first step in introducing you to the judicial process. And if it's lacking in respecting forensic audits or not making room for them or allowing for it, then I guess the homeowner is destined for failure no matter what. So, and there's lots of cases out there. How many foreclosures are there in the state of Hawaii, roughly? 10, 20, 1,000?
Thousands. Thousands.
Go ahead. You was the caller?
300 to 500 new ones every month.
500 new ones every month?
300 to 500.
Ouch.
That's dropping. They're down to, I don't know, there's something in the paper actually about the, with the real numbers, what the court says. These are judicial foreclosures now.
Right.
Still have non-judicial foreclosures, but most of those are being done by associations.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of those that go on.
Wow.
If it would be possible to get the name of the attorney who you've been interviewing. I didn't catch the thing. I was caught at the very beginning.
Melody Aduja, A-D-U-J-A. And you want a contact number for her?
If that's possible, that'd be great.
258-8889.
258-8889.
And, is she on?
Yes, I am.
This island here.
Oh, I'm Oahu. Sorry. Yeah, I'm on Oahu, Honolulu, so I do have to fly an outer island.
Okay. Well, I'm on Oahu also, so I'd be glad to give you a call.
Oh, that'd be great.
And you sound like you're knowledgeable. Send me an email at carol@carolcox.com. I'd like to invite you because what I'm learning now, it's scary. The American dream is, there's no such thing. A piece of the pie, not in at the current trend.
Well, it is very scary because of the 300 or 400, 500 foreclosures that might be filed in any month. A very small percentage, like maybe 10 out of 300 or less. Mm-hmm. Will actually challenge.
Wow.
Rest of them just go through the system and they get foreclosed on and the people are out of their homes. So,
and then we see them in the parks.
Exactly, not exactly our concept of what justice is.
Right. Hey, well, thank you, and send me an email. And for you out there that may have a problem with some fraud or have questions, send me an email at carol@carolcox.com or call me at 782-6627. We'll see you later, and thank you, call, and thank you, Attorney Duha, Ms. Franco, Edna Franco, Ms. Marlena Tobayo, and Angelita Passion. She's at KPHI, and she talks about mortgage reductions and real estate service. So tune in. What's your show on what date?
It's every Monday from 9 to 11.
Okay, on KPHI AM?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you guys, and thanks for joining in, and I appreciate it. And we'll keep following this, and hopefully something come good of this. And thank you again. CarolCox.com. You can find it in 30 minutes or so, the broad podcast.
Thank
aloha.
Thank you. Thank you, and aloha.
Thank you.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.